And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Linda Lloyd, and today we're talking with Susanna Lancaster, the author of The Growing Rock, published by Harvard Square Editions. A coming-of-age story for 14-year-old Caroline Neal, The Growing Rock is set in Depression-era West Tennessee. Caroline, an author of fairy tales, uses all of her imagination to stay positive after her brother and then her father leave the family to seek work in Memphis. With both men gone, Caroline fights to keep the rest of the family from falling apart. Susanna, it's so good to have you with us here today. You're from Memphis originally, correct?
Yes, Linda. Thanks so much for having me as well. I am from Memphis. I've lived here my whole entire life, so native Memphian.
And this book is set in West Tennessee, but in the Depression.
Right. It is set in Ripley, Tennessee, about an hour away from Memphis.
It reminded me so much of the stories that my mother told about growing up in rural East Tennessee. They didn't live on a cotton farm. It was more corn and subsistence than anything else, but it was very similar to that. Were your grandparents in that situation, or how did you even get interested in this period of time?
They were. They actually both were from Ripley, and what inspired the story at first was my grandmother telling me a lot of stories about when she was a little girl and picking cotton and living in the same kind of setting that the book takes place in. So that got me started on writing the story, and when I was in college, I was taking a creative writing class and decided, why don't I pull some of these stories together that she's been telling me for so long and, you know, put them into a short story for class. And so I did, and the instructor told me, this isn't really a short story. I think you've got, like, the beginning of a book here. So when I was in graduate school, it was fun to go back and pull out that story and make it into this longer piece that eventually became what it is today.
And Caroline's family is a large extended family. Was your grandmother's family like Caroline's with, you know, all the different relatives and everybody involved?
It was. I think hers was actually bigger. She was the youngest of 8 children. It was actually, you know, an even bigger family than the family that we see in this story. But it was a large family and lots of different dynamics kind of going on that, you know, inspired the book.
Did 14-year-old girls like Caroline in the book have to do such hard manual labor?
They did. My grandma has told me many stories from when she was picking cotton and, you know, it made her fingers bleed and just some of the hard labor that she would have to do out in the heat. It was pretty amazing just looking at how young children would have to do that. Very hard labor.
And this whole family was involved. It wasn't like they had servants come in and do this kind of work. I mean, every one of the children, even the little ones, because Caroline talks about being out in the field when she was 11, maybe.
Right.
And tells a story about how the cotton sack actually weighed more than she did.
Yeah. Yeah, they would all be out there, and it was kind of like a family effort. So, you know, back then they didn't always get to go to school, or they would quit going to school very young. My grandma always told me about how she was the only one of the 8 children to actually graduate high school. So they would work very hard and grow up faster and usually get married very, very young, 16, 18, you know, a lot younger than most people of today.
Do you think girls of today can relate to Caroline's story?
I think that they can, because I wanted this to be like a coming-of-age story. So she's 14 and she's doing a lot of hard work and things that most kids of today can never really imagine doing and that they've never had to do. But I think there's still a lot in there that they can relate to. Caroline has her first big crush, kind of her first love interest that we see develop throughout the book. She's got a lot going on with her siblings, and she's kind of jealous in some ways of her older sister Blanche, who's, you know, the pretty smart one that everybody kind of has a crush on, and she's sort of jealous about it. But she's got a lot of stuff going on that I think girls can relate to, and also the fact that she's smaller for her age, and she kind of is looked down upon by the aunts in the family, and they don't want to tell her certain things because she looks younger than she is. So I think people can relate to it and relate to those aspects of the story.
Well, you brought up the sister Blanche, and Blanche is definitely the pretty girl, but
yeah.
Why do her family seem to favor her so much more?
You know, I think there's kind of just always one of those in every family who can kind of get by with whatever they're doing, even if they're not doing their share of the work or not doing what they're supposed to do. I think there's always kind of that one sibling who can get by with stuff. And Blanche, being the oldest girl, she's just very charming and pretty, and she kind of knows how to put on her charm and get what she wants. Like, she's very good at manipulating the aunts and her mother into doing whatever it is that she wants.
Whether it's a new dress or yeah. to go out with a new boy or
right.
whatever. But Blanche seems to take delight, too, in her role, and especially when she's pitting suitors against each other, because she does that quite a bit, doesn't she?
She does, and she kind of likes to steal people's boyfriends and make people jealous. So she enjoys getting attention. And if that's the way that she can do it, and she's kind of discovered at an early age that is the way she can do it, because unlike Caroline, she wasn't as small for her age and has this really pretty figure, and she's got the looks. So she kind of has learned that that's how she can get what she wants, and she uses it.
Well, she is the Ripley Tomato Queen,
she
right?
She is.
Is there still a tomato festival?
There is a tomato festival. I discovered it when I was researching everything about the Ripley area and just everything for the book, and it started in the 80s, and so not in the Depression. But I still wanted to include that in the book, so I just reimagined how I thought it would be, you know, in the 1930s. So that was a liberty that I took, but there is still a tomato festival, and it takes place every July, hoping to go to it next year.
Well, you talked also about the Bisbee shows, and apparently that was big in the Depression, when a show would come to town, almost like the fairs, you know, everybody went.
Yeah, so there was a thing called the Bisbee shows, and they would kind of go around, basically like the fairs that we know today, and they would have, you know, dancing and music and food and just all kinds of stuff. And my grandparents had actually gone to one of those, and that was how they first met, was by going to one of these shows. And in a time when there was very little entertainment and people couldn't really afford the movies and stuff, that was something that once they found out that was coming to town, that would be just like the highlight of everybody's life at that moment, you know, and that would be something that everybody would be saving their money for, be saving, looking forward to.
Carolyn has to sneak in the first year that she goes with her brother George. Was there like an age kind of thing?
No, they just didn't have the money.
The money.
So they snuck in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, that makes sense. And that's a good memory for her after George leaves the family.
Right.
Because George has to go look for work.
And we later find out that he's missing, and they don't know what's happened to him, and they think that he got killed or lost during all the flooding that took place at the beginning of 1937 with the Mississippi and Ohio River flooding, and they thought that he was missing from that. But that is one of the best memories that she has of him, looking back on the time that they snuck in to the show.
After George leaves, she sort of takes over his part of the work. I mean, she's really called upon to do a lot in the family. Is that because she feels like she needs to do it, or was that an expectation?
A little bit of both. Near the beginning, when the father also has to leave to find work, he tells her kind of before he tells the other two girls, and he makes sure that he can rely on her and ask of her to help take care of everybody. So I think he knows right away that of the people I'm leaving, even though she's only 14, she's going to be one of the most reliable people, much more reliable than Blanche could be. And of course, more reliable than the younger sister Phoebe could be, because Phoebe's only 7.
And Phoebe's ill a lot of the time.
Right. She's kind of the sickly younger sister. But Caroline feels a lot of responsibility, and I guess that's one of the ways that she's grown up a lot faster than most 14-year-olds. So after George leaves, she does kind of take his place, and we see that a lot in how she's telling Phoebe stories and entertaining her, and she's kind of not only doing work, but also kind of being like a light in the family after George leaves, because we see how George is like the funny one, the one who's always kind of getting into trouble, sneaking and doing what he wants, sneaking into the movie theater, sneaking into the Bisbee show. He's kind of, you know, like the family clown, but he gives a lot of light and humor, you know, and joy to the family. So once he leaves, Caroline does kind of take over that role and help act for her sister the way that George had acted for her.
Because it's become very difficult for her mother. Her mother seems to be declining all yes. throughout the story. Was that depression, or do you think she was ill as well, or...
That was definitely more of depression. Even though we've got the Great Depression actually going on, I also wanted to have some real depression going on at the same time. So depression, you know, was not something that was talked about or treated the way it is now. You would just be kind of expected to get over it and continue doing the work. Especially a woman, you know, you'd be expected to care for the children and continue cooking or continue cleaning. So the mother does have really, really bad depression. But again, it was something that wasn't going to be treated the way that it would be today.
As the story continues and she goes more into the blue period, Caroline feels even more responsible for the family.
She does.
Talk about Aunt Ellesmere, because I thought, is that the way you say
yes.
it, Ellesmere? Because she was really funny, but she was also... kind of an acerbic kind of person.
Yes. Aunt Ellesmere is very, very headstrong. She's kind of like the pious person in the family who always wants to do things right and is very concerned about how the family looks on the outside to everybody else. You know, is the rest of the world perceiving the family, and are they holding up these standards that she wants them to hold up? So Aunt Ellesmere was a really fun character because she, over time, does kind of soften a little bit, and we kind of see it at the end where she's kind of respecting Caroline more than she did at first, and she always is very into Blanche and very supportive of everything Blanche does, and it's like Blanche is the little angel who could do no wrong. And at the end, Aunt Ellesmere's attitude towards Blanche has significantly changed as well. But Aunt Ellesmere was a really fun character to write.
Why on earth did she enter her in the tomato festival as the queen after she knew Blanche was the reigning, you know,
right.
queen? Why would she do that?
I think, you know, how some mothers or some people, they really want their daughters or the people after them to kind of take this spot and do maybe whatever it is that they didn't do themselves, and they force stuff on them. So Aunt Ellesmere kind of forces Caroline into, you need to be the tomato queen, basically because Blanche was. And she loved that attention that brought to the family and how it made the family look so good. So mm-hmm. naturally she wants, you know, someone else to continue bringing that
glory home.
Right.
Yeah. But she also gets Caroline involved with a neighbor that Caroline calls a crazy squirrel killer.
Yes.
Explain that terminology.
Yes, so she does. She is very, again, very pious. So at church, she volunteers Caroline to go, you know, once a week and help take care of an elderly lady who lives next door. Her land is next door to Caroline's family. And so Caroline has to go and help take care of Miss Evelyn, a lady who is getting a little senile, maybe, and she imagines people in her past are still kind of out to get her, and that people are wanting to do things or steal her money and things that, you know, are clearly not actually going on. So when Caroline first goes to see her, she really thinks that she's nuts because she shoots a squirrel right in front of Caroline. And Caroline's, you know, a little creeped out by that, doesn't really know what to think and thinks that she's kind of crazy. But she was also a really fun character to write because even though she is getting really old and it is imagining a lot of things that aren't there, she also has a lot of moments where you see like the old person still shining through, and she's not just completely crazy, and she still has a lot of, you know, goodness to her, and she becomes a really good friend to Caroline as the
and it becomes
progresses.
Almost like an escape for her.
It does.
Away from the family and the problems that they're experiencing.
It does. It becomes a really good escape to just leave the farm, to leave the work, to leave mother's depression, to leave, you know, Phoebe's sickness and Blanche's silliness, and get away and go and talk to Miss Evelyn, who may not even talk that much, but just kind of listen or not really pry into much of her business. And sometimes she tells her old stories about, you know, her life growing up. And so they just kind of have like this almost understanding between them that they don't have to talk about stuff they don't really want to talk about. So it does provide a really good escape for her.
In looking back on it, I thought, well, maybe Aunt Ellesmere knew that she needed some kind of outlet.
She could have, but it's more of like she just kind of wanted her, you know, the family to look good, and it was sort of an unlikely friendship that comes about. But I always think that Miss Evelyn and Aunt Ellesmere could have actually maybe have gotten along a little bit if they had, you know, actually gotten together.
Mm-hmm. And then Caroline's Aunt June also is one of those people who tries to take Caroline out of the breadwinner, whatever you want to call right. the manager of the farm, you know, when she's got all of this, because she actually gives her the money to go to the Bisbee show.
She does. Aunt June, I'm sorry, yeah, she is kind of one of those, like, the cool aunt. I think we all kind of have that relative or a sister or aunt or somebody who's, like, the cool person in the family or the person who you can go to when you can't go to anybody else. And so she definitely is, you know, a good escape for Caroline as well. Somebody that Caroline can talk to and relate to, and just somebody she can go to when she can't go to her own mom and her own sister.
Well, Caroline is not growing up as fast as she would like to physically.
Right.
But she begins to have all of these emotions, especially for the guy that you said that she had a crush on, Peter. He's
yes.
been on the adjacent farm. She's known him all her life. They've, you know, done everything together. They've worked hard together. And then all of a sudden, she starts having all this emotion.
Right. It kind of comes all at once, like during that summer, more and more gradually, especially where she starts to develop. It's not just a friendship anymore, but it's turning into like this really big crush on this person who's been a good friend for her for a long time.
Do you think some of that might have been peer pressure or pressure from her family, especially her aunts when they're talking and they won't let her listen? Do you think she had an expectation that she wasn't growing up fast enough?
I think a little bit. I think she kind of does want to grow up faster and to be a little bit more like her sister. But then it's also real, too, because she is starting to notice things and starting to go through, like, the hormonal changes and stuff that, you know, girls at that age go through. So it's kind of a little bit of both, for sure. But she feels a lot of pressure to be a certain way because of how her sister is.
Yeah. But Blanche has her own problems. She's engaged to one guy, and then he brings in a friend from college. She starts this relationship, I guess, with him. Did she see him as a way out, or was that just true love?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I think she kind of was starting to not see as much potential in the first person. Blanche is a lot more the kind of girl who doesn't want to just fall in love with somebody for love, but more also for the social status, the money, the what can I get out of it aspect. And so when another person comes along who has more money or more potential than the first person, she's probably going to go after, you know, that second person. And that's exactly, you know, what she does.
I really like the way that Caroline talks about tomorrow in one part of the book. She had never really thought about tomorrow until Peter asked her about that.
Yeah.
That seemed awfully heavy for a 14-year-old.
That's kind of one of those scenes where we really are seeing like a huge change in Caroline, a huge measure of growth in that scene where she's looking at tomorrow in a totally different way. Because a lot of stuff has changed and happened during this summer. And, you know, she definitely changes a lot from how she was at the beginning to how she is in the end. And by that point, she's experienced some things that, you know, I don't want to give away to those who haven't read it, but a lot of things have really changed her and changed how she looks at just every day and how she kind of looks at life in general, just all the things that are going on.
She is really into Louisa May Alcott, and Little Women seems to be an inspiration for her. She keeps referring back to that. Was that a book that meant a lot to you when you were growing up?
It was. That is one of my all-time favorite books, and the movie, too. I love it. I've watched it so many times. But that definitely was a book that was, you know, a huge inspiration to me growing up that I could relate to because of all the sisters and kind of everything going on. So, you know, it seemed like a perfect book that would also mean a lot to her and what she's going through.
And then Amelia Earhart also played in the book as an inspirational model for her. Is that
yeah.
somebody that you just kind of pulled out because of that time period, or was that somebody who also had meaning for you?
Kind of a little bit of both. I think Amelia Earhart is one of those figures that so many people still care about and are still interested in her. And we still, you know, people are still really obsessed about finding out what happened to her. And, you know, did she crash or what exactly happened? Because I think she was such a figure of hope to lots of people. So it was a little bit of both. She always intrigued me. And it was always one of those things in history that was just kind of mind-boggling. I always wanted to know what really happened to her. And so when I started writing the book and realized that's the same year that Amelia Earhart, you know, went missing that summer, it seemed like a perfect thing that would definitely affect a lot of people and people who looked up to her and people who wanted life to be different, especially a girl like Caroline, who is kind of different from how everybody wants her to be. And she's kind of a little bit of an oddball at times. So Amelia Earhart's this very different from how most women were. And mm-hmm. So that's the exact kind of person that Caroline looked up to and yeah. found hope in.
Well, The Growing Rock is not only the name of your book, but it's also the name of a story that Caroline writes, and it's almost a fairy story.
The Growing Rock got its title from the story that the family has kind of passed on to each other for a while. George kind of helped get the story started, and then Caroline's kind of taken over it and written more to it to explain and entertain her little sister Phoebe. So The Growing Rock is a huge rock that sits behind the family's house, and it's a really, really big rock that several, you know, grown-ups could sit on and still have some room. So the family has used the rock throughout the years to sit on or, you know, put their laundry on or just use for various things. And George came up with the idea that the rock was actually growing and that every summer the rock would get a little bit larger. So Caroline has written a story for her school that actually won like a little award about this rock that grows. And it grows because there's a family of fairies living underneath it. And so when the fairies come out in the summertime, that's when the fairies have their offspring and the rock gets bigger to make room for all of these new fairies that are living underneath it.
I thought it was a great story. Thank I could just, you. You know, see me telling my little sister something like that, because yeah. that's kind of the way we were, you know,
right.
always coming up with something. Is your family like that as well?
Kind of. We're also sort of a big family. I'm the middle of five kids. And so we were always pretty creative growing up and like to make stories up about things. I was always a huge reader, so I was always writing stories about stuff myself and coming up with weird little stories and things to entertain people with and surprise my dad with, like when he got home from work. So it brought a lot of memories back when I was writing the book. I started writing the actual book, what it is now, about 4 or 5 years ago. And I wrote the whole book within the time frame of about a year, year and a half. The rest was just the revision and editing that kind of really never ends until like the day that the book comes out on shelf.
Right.
It's a never ending process. It was a huge challenge, really. Like I hadn't really been prepared for what exactly it would mean. I think we kind of have this idea in our heads that once it's accepted, like it's accepted and it's published and happily ever after the end. But, you know, that's definitely not how it works. And I was kind of naive to think that, but there's a lot of work that goes on behind it. Even once it's accepted for publication, there's still a lot of editing to be done and still a ton of revision that takes place even after that. So it was kind of this long process, and things in the story definitely changed a whole lot. It's really funny to look back at the original short story that it came from. Caroline's name was not Caroline, it was Jan. And Phoebe was actually a little boy. George, the brother, his ending was going to turn out a lot different from how his ending turns out in the book. So it really shaped and changed just a ton over mm-hmm. the span of the time that I was writing it.
Well, are you working on something new?
I am. I'm working on several different things. I don't like to give like too much away about what I'm working on, but one is another historical fiction piece, and it's set in the 60s. And then the other piece I'm working on is a contemporary young adult book that deals kind of a lot with trauma and PTSD and the stuff that comes with trauma and healing.
Wow. Well, going through the story with Caroline, I mean, she could be a PTS person, you know, if you really think about it.
With all that she
experienced just that one summer, you know.
It is a lot.
It's a lot
for one person.
Yeah, it really is. Did you have to do a lot of research?
I did. I think that's kind of what made the whole process take a little bit longer, because I wanted it to be you know, as accurate as I could get it. If I knew something was wrong, I was definitely going to change it. I wanted it to be as accurate as I could make it. So during the time I was writing it, I was reading a ton about the Depression, checking books out about Lauderdale County, where Ripley, Tennessee is. I interviewed my grandparents a ton about their memories and what they remembered and the types of clothing they wore and what it was like to be out picking cotton in the heat and just really any details that they could remember. And so they helped me a ton with it. And then I did little things like listen to 1930s music. A lot of times when I was writing, I would have 30s music playing just to kind of get in the mindset of what it felt like to be in that time period. And I would just do whatever I could to kind of put myself, you know, back in the time that the characters were in. I think that was the biggest challenge for me, for sure, was trying to make it feel like the 1930s and not like now. It's very difficult to go from 2018, 2017 to 1937, to go back in time by 80 years. So I guess over time, I kind of just learned don't worry quite as much about fitting it in and making it feel like the historically accurate part. Try to just tell the story and then let the history kind of mold itself around that story and around the feelings that the characters have.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so different too. I mean, when you think about how Caroline's life would be in 2018.
Oh my gosh, very different.
I mean, there's some of the same problems, you know, with growing up and the maturity and, you know, your first love and that kind of thing. But golly, today it's just...
It's very different.
She had a radio, and that was about it, right?
No phones. They can't reach each other. So when people go missing, that's, you know, makes it a lot harder. And now you would just be able to pull out your cell phone and probably, you know, figure it all out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, or figure it out through Facebook. You know, it would be extremely different. It wouldn't be the same story at all.
Well, when you started writing, were you writing for a young adult audience or a younger age? Or what do you think your audience for this book is?
So when I first started writing it, it definitely was actually maybe a little bit younger. It was, I'm trying to remember if Caroline was the, I think she was about 13 or 14. Her age didn't really change. But that was one of the things that made the process so interesting was Caroline's age, because she was 14. So when I was trying to get it published and was at the point where I was sending out the query letters and sending it to, you know, literary agents and publishing houses, they usually don't always tell you what you did, you know, that made them turn it down. But sometimes if you're lucky, they'll give you a little bit of a reason why. And one of the things that people kind of had just a little bit of difficulty with was her age. And the age of 14 is a really awkward age because it can still fall into the middle grade reading, but it can also fall into young adult reading. So it was kind of difficult to know where would we place this on the shelf if we published it. And that always kind of drove me nuts because age 14 really is both. And that's why it's such an awkward age. And that's why it's, you know, such a difficult kind of age for Caroline, because it's, you're still kind of both. But in the end, I decided to go with young adult and make it just kind of up the content a little bit and push it for a young adult audience since she was 14. But it always was never a question that it would be a book for young readers. It was just a question of which area.
Well, do you think it's appropriate for, you know, 10, 11, 12 year olds, or is it more gauged toward high school?
I think it's definitely still appropriate for 10, 11, 12-year-olds. I think it always just depends on the kid. And most of the time with books like this, kids read older. So when I was 11, 12 years old, I loved reading books about a 14, 15-year-old. So most of the time, kids want to read up a little bit. So I think that it would be, you know, totally fine for a 10, 11, 12-year-old. But if it would always, you know, just depend on the kid and where they're at reading-wise and, you know, if the content's appropriate for them. But I think for most readers, it would be.
Tell me a little bit about your signing that will be going on this week.
Yeah, so I have a signing and reading taking place Thursday night. It's January 11th. It's at 6 o'clock. And it will be at the Novel Bookstore over off of Perkins Extended. And that night I'll be reading from the book. I'm just reading, you know, a small excerpt of the book to give people kind of an idea of what it's about. And then I'll be talking about just where the ideas for the book came from and how I got started writing. you know, anybody can ask questions, maybe things that weren't covered today. People could bring those questions to the signing and feel free to ask them. And then, of course, I'll be signing books and giving out bookmarks that I've got. And also, I have a giveaway of a custom mug that I designed with the book on it. So one person will go home lucky with the mug that they'll win.
And if people want to know more about you, where can they find you?
They can find me pretty much anywhere. I have a website. It's SusannaLancaster.com. I'm also on Facebook, the Susanna Lancaster page. And then I also have an author Instagram account, which is Susanna_Lancaster_author. So I post on those pretty frequently, any events I've got or any articles or book reviews or anything that comes out, you know, it goes on those pages.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us today, and I wish you good luck in the future, and just keep us posted on what's going on.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Thank you. We've reached the end of our time for today's book talk. I've been talking with Susanna Lancaster, the author of The Growing Rock. The book, set on a cotton farm during Depression-era West Tennessee, features a determined 14-year-old dealing with problems that are well beyond her years. The book is published by Harvard Square Editions. I'm Linda Lloyd, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WYPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.